The purpose of this class is to explain, briefly at least, the relationship between the holiday of Sukkot, and Bnei Noach, if there is a relationship. So I'm going to do this in three aspects. Aspect number one, the story, what's written actually in the scriptures regarding this holiday of Sukkot. Second aspect, which I'm going to divide into also, observances. There are observances in a practical way today, and there are observances that used to be done in the times of the temple that should be rebuilt speedily in our days. And the third idea is messages. Now, let's start. The Torah says in the third book of the Torah, Parshas Emor, what's the whole thing of this holiday of Sukkot? So the Torah says that God took the Jewish people out of Egypt and he put us, so to speak, into huts. Sukkah means a hut, into huts when we went out of Egypt. Now, there's an argument in the Talmud, actually, what these huts meant. Rabbi Akiva says these were actually huts, that we lived in huts in the desert, etc., etc. Rabbi Eliezer says, no huts. When we went out of Egypt, God surrounded the Jewish people with clouds of glory that had a specific mission of putting down mountains, putting up valleys, killing wild animals, etc., etc. And in remembrance of the clouds of glory that God gave, so to speak, to protect the Jewish people, then we live in Sukkot, in huts, in this particular holiday. And it's actually written in the Torah that generation after generation, Parshas Emor, we should remember that God protected us when we went out of Egypt, etc. That's the story. Now, interestingly to note that the Jewish people went out of Egypt actually in the times of Nisan, which is like summer in the land of Israel. And we celebrate Sukkot in the time of Tishrei, which is close to the raining season. So why is that? Because everybody wants to be out, so to speak, in summer in order to get some air. You know, it's easy to make a hut in summer. But during the times or close to the times of rains, it's not so easy. So God gave us this commandment to the Jewish people in order to actually do it because of the commandment, not because it's nice to be sitting in a hut. This has no relationship at all with Bnei Noach. This only expresses the relationship with the between God and the Jewish people. That's regarding the story of Sukkot and why we do Sukkot. Now let's go to observances and let's start from today. Nowadays, there are two basic and main issues on the observances of Sukkot for the Jewish people. The first one is to take four species, which I'm not going to detail right now. It's not the point. But we have to take, it is also written in Parshas Emor, in the Torah, have to take four species and put them together and do a whole thing, etc., etc. This has nothing to do with Bnei Noach. And the second idea is that we have to sit in a hut, we have to build a hut with specific laws, etc., etc., and sit in the hut. Now, this also has nothing to do with Bnei Noach, even though the Rambam says, Maimonides says, that if a Ben Noach, if a non-Jew wants to keep one of the commandments of the Torah, he's according to the laws of that commandment, according to how the Jews understand in the written Torah, in the oral Torah, this commandment, he can do it, or she can do it. But it's important to know that all the energies that the great sages explain, and also the quote-unquote great Mekubalim Kabbalists of internet, they explain that there's an energy when the person takes these species, the four species, and put them together. Said, all of that does not work for Bnei Noach. It does not happen, even though we don't see it. But believe me, the sages say this doesn't happen. So if they're selling you something, don't buy, because actually it's rotten fish, so to speak, as they say. Okay, so let's move on. The observances have nothing to do with Bnei Noach. Furthermore, there's a prohibition during the holiday itself of Sukkot to invite a non-Jew to your sukkah, to your meal, so to speak. Not necessarily has a connection with non-Jews, with Bnei Noach, etc. That's regarding the observances today. Now, what happened in the observances in the time of the temple? It should be rebuilt speedily in our days. Then the thing is different. It says in the fourth book of Torah, Parshas Pinchas, that there were a number of offerings during the holiday of Sukkot to a total 7 days, to a total of 70 bulls. And the Talmud says clearly, Rabbi Eliezer says, the same one that spoke about the clouds of glory, that Rabbi Eliezer says that these 70 bulls actually were one for each one of the 70 nations. We know, and you can look at it at the end of Parshas Noach, there were 70 nations. There were 70 nations. Today, they're all mixed up. We don't know which nation is what, but originally there were 70 nations. And we offered, this is what the Talmud says, we offered a bull for the well-being of each one of the nations throughout the holiday of Sukkot. And that well-being meant, because Sukkot, the Talmud says, Sukkot is a time for judgment of water, that means that every single place in the world should get some water in order to have sustenance, etc., etc., then we offer a bull for the well-being of all the nations, so it should rain in all the world, the whole world. That's what the Talmud explains. Now, one of the ideas of this is, actually the Talmud says this, Rabbi Yochanan says, if the non-Jews would know the benefit that the temple brought to them through the offerings of the Jews in the temple on behalf for the benefit of the non-Jews, not only they wouldn't have destroyed the temple, they would have guarded the temple. But whatever, they didn't know. They don't know what they lost. That's what the language says there in the Talmud. They don't know what they lost. But whatever. In any case, so we see a connection to the non-Jews in the festival, in the holiday of Sukkot. However, that connection, today we don't have a temple. Today we don't do the offerings, even though we can learn about the offerings. And the sages say that when you learn about the offerings, it is as if you actually offered that sacrifice, etc. But that goes through the Jews. That means that when a Jew is learning this, it is as if he brought the offering, etc., etc. And then Jew can learn about his offerings. And probably, I don't know, but probably it is as if he brought the, or she, whatever, brought the offering. But the point is that the offerings in Sukkot, they brought well-being to the non-Jews, to the point that well-being was so strong, to the point that, again, it rained in the whole world. And furthermore, the Zohar says, in Kabbalah it's written, that, and you can see the sources actually in the description of the class, in Kabbalah it's written that not only the Jews were happy in the holiday of Sukkot, as it says, "Vesamachta v'chagecha," you will be happy in your holiday, but the non-Jews were also happy and blessed by the works, so to speak, of the Jews during the festival, the holiday of Sukkot. So, physically speaking, we don't have the offerings today, but we read the offerings in the daily reading of the Torah in the synagogue, and we read each day what was offered in that day. So certainly, non-Jews can be happy in the holiday of Sukkot, and certainly that happiness brings with it blessing, a physical sustenance blessing and healing blessing, etc., etc. And this is what the Zohar says clearly. Now, do they have to do something about it? No, really, there's nothing, no observance to do. And if a person makes up observances by himself, he's doing a new religion, making up a religion, and this is forbidden. The Rambam says this very, very clear in the Laws of Kings, chapter 10. Now, that's about the story and the observances both today and in the times of the temple. What about the messages? The most basic message of Sukkot is, be aware of God's protection. God protects us. We feel this protection, so to speak, when we are at home, in a safe place, etc., etc. But when we go out of this safe place into a hut that doesn't look so safe, etc., etc., but we still are aware of the protection of God. He is on top of us, so to speak, for the good. And he is actually protecting us, and he is sustaining us, etc., etc. This is the general message of Sukkot, to be aware of this protection of God. And this applies to every single human being. But again, do you have to do something about it? The truth is, no. There's nothing that has to be done. Just something has to be thought about. You can talk about it. You can learn about what Sukkot is, etc., etc. But there's nothing you have to really actually have to do. So it should be Sukkot, a source of blessing for every single human being in the face of the earth. And as it's written in Zephaniah, in chapter 3, that we will serve God shoulder by shoulder, so to speak. And God's going to talk clearly to every single human being in order to together serve Him with the construction of the temple. And we should actually feel this closeness in the protection of God with the coming of Mashiach speedily in our days.